Most of you, I'm sure, are familiar with the verse in Proverbs that reads, "Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed." Really? Success is that easy? Well, yes, if you understand what it truly means to commit to the Lord whatever you do. I witnessed the truth of that statement exemplified in our host, psychologist, and author, Dr. James Dobson, over and over again. Hi, this is Mike Trout. You're listening to Focus on the Family, and today we're going to share a success story as we talk about an experience that Dr. Dobson had last summer. Doctor, after your stroke, you took 7 weeks off, and during that time completed 3 books. I mean, it's unbelievable as I think about that. And we're going to be talking about the other two in the next few weeks. Today, let's zero in on a book called Coming Home, Timeless Wisdom for Families. Explain what that is.
You know, Mike, before I do, as you say that, it is an incredible testament to God's kindness and gift to me to be able to go away and write, to create, to engage in the intellectual process of putting your thoughts on paper. After having nearly lost everything on June the 16th last year, when I couldn't even say I love you to my wife. And to be able 2 weeks later to start these 3 projects, which I finished last summer, it really is quite remarkable and doesn't have a whole lot to do with me, but it has a whole lot to do with the prayers from God's people that he would heal me, and he certainly did that.
If we have anybody that's tuned us in for the first time today, we're talking about a stroke that you experienced on the 16th of June. What a busy time that was. We were going like a house of fire here. You were trying to get ready to leave, which you eventually did, and went to Boston for the writing trip. I was trying to get ready to take off for the UK. I was going to ride with a sister ministry over there across that country, and your body just said, "Uncle," at one point.
Not going any further.
And
as a matter of fact, we've mentioned this before, Mike, but you and I sat here in the studio after doing our broadcast that afternoon before my stroke occurred at 9:30 that night and talked about the brevity of life and how fortunate we were to be in this responsibility to do the fun things that we're doing here and that it wouldn't last forever, and let's enjoy it while we can. I wish we had a recording of that conversation, but it, 6 hours later or so, it looked like it was over.
Right. You never know when you're going to have that last exchange someone. And it makes you think twice about what you're saying and how you're acting toward them. We'll talk about the book.
Okay. It was a fun project, Mike, because Coming Home is a compilation of 90-second commentaries that are now being aired around the world. Now, that may sound like an exaggeration, but literally, the best we can determine, 660 million people hear these short statements about the family in 27, I believe, countries, right, Mike?
That's 27.
From as far away as Indonesia and Australia and Latin America and South Africa. Mike, I think it would be interesting to tell our listeners how these commentaries came to be. I think it goes back to 1989.
Well, you and I had talked and dreamed about ways that we could reach out beyond the network that we had at that time. And a call came in, I think, to you from an old friend of yours, Mike McGee, who at that moment was the athletic director at the University of Southern California.
He sure was.
Your alma mater. And a local station in Los Angeles, a major facility, a CBS-owned station there, KNX, carried all of USC's sports, and Mike said, "We'd like to have you as one of our alumni on the air. Somehow we'd like to link you with KNX." And we began to dream, and he put me in touch with Bob Sims, who is the news director there. Bob is still at KNX. And over the next year and a half, we talked about what we could do. The Gulf War intervened, and finally, after the Gulf War was over, Bob gave me a call. I remember a conversation I had with him while I was in an airport in Chicago, and he said, "Mike, let's go ahead. Let's try something that would be short. It'd fit into a nice news format where we're weaving in and out of the sports and the weather and everything else." And so we began on KNX with the 90-second commentaries in 1991.
To be honest, as you well know, I was not terribly excited about this project in the beginning because I knew it was going to take a lot of time, a lot of work. I already had a full plate, and I just wasn't sure where I was going to get the energy to add yet another dimension to Focus on the Family, especially to write these commentaries and to record them for one station, even though it was a major CBS affiliate, as you said, there in Los Angeles. But it was something that I just really didn't think was worth it, frankly, at the time. But you urged me to go for it, and that ministry, that new method of communication, has spread in ways that we could never have anticipated. And again, it bears the ordination of God himself. I say that because we know why the door's open to us.
As a matter of fact, just 8 years after our beginning in 1991, we saw the doors open even wider, and we don't know where this is going to end. You and I were in Washington, D.C. just a couple of weeks ago for a dinner meeting with a number of radio stations, some of whom carry these commentaries, others that we hope will carry them down the road. You spoke at a major convention for news and talk formatted radio stations put on by Radio and Records, a major industry publication. ABC was there. They're representing the commentary.
C-SPAN carried that around the country,
so some
of our listeners may have seen
it. Your speech, you spoke to that group at lunch, and as they introduced you, the MC said that your daily commentary placed third behind two other personalities, Rush Limbaugh and Charles Osgood. Now, if you add in the news, Paul Harvey ranks number one and you fall to four, but that's still
that's pretty good company. Yeah.
Over 11 million listeners a week here in the United States, and when you add the international numbers, it just goes through the roof.
Mike, that's all very humbling, and it's also interesting that Focus on the Family, the 30-minute broadcast that we're doing at this moment, has been on the air since 1977, and yet there are more people that hear us by way of secular radio and television than do through the ministry.
That's right.
Here. So there's a whole new world out there that we're trying to reach. It's my understanding, Mike, and I heard this the other day, that 97% of the people in Malaysia hear that 90-second commentary, which is pretty surprising when you think about it.
It is, and they hear the English language version there in Malaysia. There are four other languages into which the commentaries are translated, Spanish, Indonesian, Mandarin Chinese, and Slovak, which means that some of them obviously have to be rewritten so that they're culturally relevant for those countries.
Especially in China, Mike, you can imagine the cultural differences, but it's amazing how these messages fit a Chinese culture. By the way, I'm not known in China by the name Dobson. I'm not sure why, but my name that's attached to these commentaries is Dr. Du. Now, don't ask me why or what it means in Chinese, because I don't know. But if you ask a cab driver in Beijing if he's heard of Dr. Du, he'll tell you that, yes, he's heard him on the radio.
Well, and as you think about China, the listenership is just phenomenal, the potential listenership. You're on a network that reaches the entire population, potentially.
State-owned.
That's right. Everyone tunes into the radio. It's the main form of mass communication there. And it's possible that over a billion listeners could hear your commentary. That's mind-boggling.
Well, it really is, Mike. And again, I would ask our listeners to be in prayer that the Lord will continue to spread this message even farther, because the needs of families are pretty similar around the world. Let's go back to the book, Coming Home, which deals with these commentaries. We've written 479 of them so far, and there are more to come. And why don't we let our listeners hear some of the actual commentaries rather than just talking about them, and let them get a feel for them.
All right. Now, we'll play what everyone hears on the radio, the actual commentary as it airs. Which one are we going to start with?
Well, the first one happens to be the first entry in Coming Home, Mike. I called it In Recognition of Mothers. 2 days from now, we're going to be celebrating Mother's Day here in the United States, and that gives me an occasion to tip my hat to those special women whom we honor every year at this time. There is no assignment on earth that requires the array of skills and understanding needed by a mom in fulfilling her everyday duties. She must be a resident psychologist, and a physician, and a theologian, and an educator, a nurse, a chef, a taxi driver, a fire marshal, and even an occasional police officer. Join her on her mid-morning visit to the pediatrician's office. After sitting for 45 minutes with a cranky, feverish toddler on her lap, mom and baby are finally ushered into the examining room. The doctor checks out the sick child and then tells the woman with a straight face, "Be sure you keep him quiet for 4 or 5 days. Don't let him scratch the rash. Make certain he keeps the medicine down, and you'll want to watch his stool." "Yeah, sure, Doc. Any other suggestions?" "Just one. This disease is contagious. Keep your other 4 kids away from him. I'll see you in a week." The amazing thing is that most mothers would get this job done, and they'd do it with love and tenderness. God made them good at what they do, and he gave them a passion for their children. They would, quite literally, lay down their lives to protect the kids entrusted to their care. And that's why they're deserving of our admiration on this Mother's Day. With Focus on the Family, this is Dr. James Dobson.
And a million mothers said thank you for those thoughts.
I have had a great appreciation for mothers and what they do from the early days, Mike. Obviously, I had a great mother, and I appreciate the women out there who are devoting themselves and giving their lives to the next generation. And that's why that piece is listed first in Coming Home.
What's the second one?
Second one is called A Forgotten Monument.
Last summer, I was in a picturesque little town called Garmisch in southern Germany, and I happened to notice a small monument erected in memory of the young men who died in the First World War. It caught my attention because, as an American, I've always thought of our war dead as heroes, and the enemy losses as, well, the enemy. But there on a bronze plaque were the names of boys who actually lived in that beautiful village and who suffered, bled, and died for their country. About 20 men were listed, along with their ranks and dates of death, 1914 to 1918. I stood reading those names and wondering what stories they concealed and what their losses meant to the loved ones waiting in that little town. Then I walked to the other side of the monument and saw another bronze plaque listing the dead from the Second World War, 1939 to 1945. Something immediately jumped out at me. Many of the last names were the same. It was obvious that the young men who had lost their lives in that first great war had left little boys behind who grew up in time to die in the next conflagration. It also meant there were women in Garmisch who lost their husbands in World War I, only to have their sons die 2 decades later on other battlefields. This little journey into history emphasized for me once more that it is families that suffer most from the ravages of war. With Focus on the Family, this is Dr. James Dobson.
You know, Dr. Nancy and I were in Garmisch in Germany back in 1985, and I'm sure we saw that same monument. Mm. I'd love to go back there now and think these thoughts reflect on your comments there as we look at the monument afresh and anew now.
Mike, I stood in front of that obelisk, that little monument there, for probably 10 or 15 minutes, just thinking about the stories that were represented there, as I mentioned in the commentary. And recognizing again, I'm sure that some people will read this and think that I'm not patriotic because our boys died in that war too.
Sure.
But it does come down to families, regardless of which side you're on, and war is a tragedy from any perspective.
Well, we're playing 90-second commentaries during today's Focus on the Family broadcast. The Focus on the Family commentaries, which are heard on radio stations all across this country and around the world. We have time for more. Where shall we go next?
Well, Mike, some of them are just for fun. There's no great timeless wisdom in them at all, and we're going to hear one now that I call 4-on-4. I've always loved the game of basketball, even though I've never been particularly skilled at it. But a few years ago, at age 50, I had the opportunity of a lifetime. My friends and I had gone to a conference in Laguna, California, which is a beach town populated mostly by surfers and sun worshippers. During an afternoon break, someone suggested that 4 of us old guys go down to the outdoor basketball court on the beach and challenge the young hotshots that play there. It was a stupid thing to do, but off we went. When we arrived, about 300 spectators surrounded the court, where 4-man teams waited to take their turn at the reigning champs. Well, we got in line, and rumors began to spread immediately about who these old dudes really were. Some thought we were NBA scouts, checking out the talent. Others thought we were coaches from USC or UCLA. As for me, I've never been so nervous in my life as I waited to play the champs. But we finally stepped on the court, and the impossible happened. We got hot, and we hit everything we shot. Within 2 minutes, we were up 8-0. The crowd went crazy as people began to come from everywhere on the beach. Only 3 more buckets, and we would have pulled off the upset of the century. But then reality set in and we lost 11-8. Alas, athletic immortality often hangs by the slenderest thread. I missed it by 3 lousy buckets. How close have you come? With Focus on the Family, this is Dr. James Dobson.
Good question. I can guarantee you it's more than 3 buckets.
Mike, I would have given $500 for 2 more baskets. I tell you, I would have thought about that the rest of my life, but it was not to be.
And I think most of our listeners can probably identify with being in that situation and having that kind of reaction. That's a great example of the kind of nugget, lesson that you share every single day on these radio stations around the world.
Well,
what
Mike,
a privilege.
It's fun. I not only try to get across an idea, but to illustrate it in some way. And this next one, I think, does that. In fact, the title of it will give it away. It's called Princess Diana. Princess Diana was arguably one of the most glamorous and beautiful women in the world. She was also one of the most photographed women on earth, as evidenced by the paparazzi who tracked her every move right to the very moment of her death. No other person could generate support for a particular charity or a cause, quite like Diana, Princess of Wales. Given this enormous influence, this glamour and beauty, isn't it interesting that Diana had a bad body image, that she disliked what she saw in the mirror, and for a time struggled with an eating disorder known as anorexia nervosa? How could a woman of such wealth and popularity descend into self-loathing and depression? Perhaps her poor self-concept isn't as strange as it might seem. Our value system, promoted so vigorously by Hollywood and the entertainment industry, is arranged so that no woman feels particularly good about her physical body. Even the Miss America or Miss Universe competitors will tell you, if they're honest, about the physical flaws that bug them about themselves. If those who are blessed with great beauty and charm often struggle with self-hatred, imagine how your immature, gangly teenagers feel about the imperfect bodies with which they're born. The beauty cult is an international curse plaguing hundreds of millions of people with a sense of inadequacy and inferiority. Even the late princess fell victim to its condemnation. With Focus on the Family, this is Dr. James Dobson.
As the dad of 3 daughters, I understand what you're saying in that commentary. What an important lesson for all of us to be reminded of, that reference to the beauty cult. And that also ties into another book that you worked on last summer, 25th anniversary update of your classic Hide or Seek.
Hide or Seek was published in 1974, Mike, and it has been brought up to date, and there's a new version of it. Maybe we can talk about that someday.
Oh, I hope so. That's one of my favorite books of yours. Let's hear another commentary.
Well, one that's kind of linked to that in a way. It has to do with the spirits of children, and it's called That's Okay, Jake.
Oh, this is one of my
you
favorites.
You like this one.
I do.
Dick Korthals, one of our volunteers here at Focus on the Family, tells of an experience he had while attending a dog show. As part of the competition, about a dozen dogs were commanded to stay and then expected to remain in a statue-like manner for 8 minutes while their owners left the ring. Judges scored them on how well they were able to hold their composure during their master's absence. Well, about 4 minutes into the exercise, Dick noticed the dog on the end, a magnificent German shepherd named Jake. He seemed to be losing his poise, slinking slowly toward the ground. By the time his trainer returned, poor Jake was lying flat on his stomach with his head on his paws. Now, Jake immediately saw the disappointment in his owner's eyes and began crawling on his belly toward him. Everyone was expecting the trainer to scold the dog for his poor performance. But instead, he bent down and he cupped the dog's head in his hands. And then he said with a smile, "That's okay, Jake. We'll do better next time." It was a very touching moment. There's a lesson here for every parent, too. Children are going to disappoint us. It's an inevitable part of child-rearing. And when they do, our natural reaction is to bark at them. "Why'd you do that? And how could you have been so stupid?" But if we're wise, we'll remember that they're just immature children, just like we used to be, and simply say with warmth, "That's okay. You'll do better next time." With Focus on the Family, I'm Dr. James Dobson.
You know, as a dad, listening to these, you can get kind of guilty. I wish I had had that attitude more often during the child-raising years.
You know, Mike, somebody sent me a prayer the other day. It may sound sacrilegious, but I think dog lovers will understand it. It said, "Lord, make me as good as my dog thinks I am.
That's right.
And none of us measure up to that.
No matter what you do, those big old eyes still look at you with love and adoration.
Mike, we got time for one more. I tell you, I'd like to share another 50 of these because...
people will just have to get a copy of the book.
Yeah, maybe I'm more taken up with them than anybody else is. But this one will also make you feel a little guilty as a dad. But, man, I think this is powerful. This came from another staff member who shared something with me, and it's called Dad, I Never Really Knew You. Several months ago, I talked to a man who described one of the most painful experiences of his life. When he was 17 years old, he was one of the stars on his high school football team. But his father, a very successful man in the city, was always too busy to come see him play. Quickly, the final game of the season came around, which happened to be the state championship, and the boy was just desperate to have his dad there. The night of the big game, the boy was on the field warming up when he happened to see his father arrive with two other men, each wearing dress suits. They stood talking among themselves for a moment or two, and then he saw them leave. The man who told me this story is now 58 years of age, and yet he stood there with tears streaming down his cheeks as he relived that moment so long ago. It's been 40 years since that night, and yet the rejection and disappointment are as vivid as ever. I was struck again by the awesome influence a father has in the lives of his children. When he's uninvolved, when he doesn't love or care for them, it creates a vacuum that reverberates for decades. That man's father died not long ago, and he stood by his dad's body in the mortuary and said, "Dad, I never really knew you. We could have shared so much love together, but you never had time for me." With Focus on the Family, this is Dr. James Dobson.
Doctor, I'm so glad as I think about my relationship with my own dad that I will not say that when I look at him when he passes.
It still puts a lump in your throat.
Oh, it sure does.
Because you know so many people who are listening to us right now had fathers who never really knew them. They worked hard. They provided for the family. They thought they were doing well. But when it was all over, they never really touched heart to heart.
That's
and,
right.
I do trust that our listeners will not make that mistake. Mike, it's interesting to me why people are responding to these commentaries the way they are. It's in a secular context. You know, they're heard by many, many millions of people who are not believers. And certainly around the world, why are so many other cultures in so many other countries reacting positively to these statements? The reason is because God made us all, and he made us all with similar characteristics. We have a need to be touched. We have a need for love. And coming home, and these commentaries attempt to reach through that outer shell and touch a person right in that tender spot and hopefully draw people not only to the family, but by inference, because we can't deal directly with our theology on these commentaries, but to draw them indirectly to Jesus Christ, and that's our purpose. Mm.
Now, also, the concept of wisdom, I think, is something that we have a strong desire for and we keep moving away from. Mm. We have a lot of knowledge. Things are coming at us so fast. We are moving rapidly in this society. We gain a lot of information and knowledge, but we don't always dig deep and get the wisdom.
We deny that it exists because we say there is no truth.
Right.
Nothing is true. If nothing is true, nothing can be wise. And maybe we're trying to deal with that issue, too.
Well, there are 120 of these commentaries from Dr. Dobson in this book, Coming Home, Timeless Wisdom for Families. Check with your local bookstore for a copy. It's published by Tyndale. This program was provided by Focus on the Family. You can find us on the web if you'd like further information about this outreach to families and details specifically about that book. Our website is family.org. Our producer has been Kelly Crowther. Engineering and production were taken care of by Steve Ryder. Our executive producer is Mrs. Bobby Valentine. Our host has been psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.